Lead the Narrative. I'm Jay Lorraine Norris, your host of Lead the Narrative, and our objective is really, really clear. Well, so is the agenda and the narrative. How odd is that? I believe that there are some core values that our country was founded on, some core values that are really good for society, some of the kind of things that when I became a soldier, I took an oath to protect and defend. And here's an irony for you. My military service may have expired, but the oath hasn't. Yeah, so we like to talk about things that are, well, nobody else likes to talk about it, or maybe you're afraid to, or maybe they're taboo, as a friend would say on Taboo Talk. But I think really what I want to do is have the kind of conversation that invites you to the conversation. It's your First Amendment too. It's not just mine. It's not just my opinion that counts. It's yours too. It's not just those who own the big megaphones and the microphones and the cameras and the studios and the networks. It's not their job to tell you how to live your life. It's yours. If you're a leader, that means you have influence. My mentor, John Maxwell, says it very clearly. Leadership is influence, nothing more and nothing less. And I don't care if you influence the five people around your dinner table, or 500 people in your organization, or 500,000 with your microphone or your OnlyFans page. If you have influence, you're a leader. The question is, where are you leading them? Here on Lead the Narrative, we're very busy about the business of having the kinds of conversation that nobody else wants to have, and looking for the plot lines. We want to rewrite the script. And I'm looking every day to find more people who are willing to say, here's what you don't know about the story that you're hearing. Here's what you don't know about the facts that you've been told. Here's what you don't know about the history that's been rewritten, 1619 Project. There's a lot of it. So here on Lead the Narrative, we invite people in. And this particular series, we are focused on a group of friends from the Media Liberty Alliance, other media people, podcasters, television broadcasters, magazine publishers, people who are making an impact in their community. It may not be a CNN-sized community. Maybe we're not as big as CNN or Fox, if you want a real network. But we are influencers, and we are leading the narrative. And so we have in studio with us Susan and Larry, and we have virtually joining us Christine. And we want to continue this conversation about what it means to lead the narrative. One of the topics that came up as we wrapped up the last show was, okay, that's great. What do we do about it? So I'm going to jump right out there. Christine, tell us what your sense is on the action that we can take without finding ourselves locked away in Gitmo.
Well, there's the crux of it, isn't it? You know, I think one of the major things we can do is we can absolutely rebel. Non-compliance. They say, don't say this. Well, you're almost guaranteed I'm going to say that. I think we're at this place where our rights, you know, we were talking about this last segment. Our rights are not given to us by the government. They are given to us by God. In fact, the amendments are there to control the government and to limit them on their ability to overextend themselves with our rights. And I think we're at this place where, you know, everybody's going to have to start choosing. You know, if you do not, have you ever heard the term use it or lose it? I think we're at that place. If we don't use our free speech, we will lose it. If we don't use our Second Amendment rights, we will lose it. We are now at that moment in history, I believe, with our country. It's a use it or lose it time. And so we at the magazine, we're absolutely using it. Like you, I took an oath. My oath did not expire with my DD-214. And we are continuing to fulfill that oath through freedom of speech. In giving veterans a voice, an unhindered, uncensored, often voice. And we will continue to do so. And in the process, yes, I have counted the cost. We have covered January 6th defendants. We have covered taboo subjects. And we are not going to stop now. We're going to continue to do what we do. Because if we don't use them, if we don't, that is one way to protect them. Use your rights.
Love
so
it.
That's kind of where we're at.
Oh, I love that. What else do you do? I mean, that's actually built into the Constitution, that this right to nullify. And a lot of times people think, well, that must mean my municipality must come together and nullify, or my county or my state. And that's not true. Those constitutional boundaries that say the government can only come this far and no closer, because I get to protect my person, my family, my property, and my business. And the government can't come into those places beyond the limitations that I put on them. And when they do, when they infringe on that, then I have an obligation and a duty, as Lauren and Christine pointed out during the break, to nullify that and say, no, we don't do that. Matter of fact, I agree with you, Christine, on the action point. In 2020, the 4th of July, Larry was in my backyard in my driveway with my husband, and we were building the stage to move into our very first studios because we wanted to set an example. No, we don't mask. Because why? Because I understand what masking traditionally has meant throughout history, historical fact, what those masks are about. That is absolutely about social control, and there was absolutely no science behind it. And as a matter of fact, I know how dangerous it is to have your face covered that far. So no, that was a no, that was an absolute, but somebody had to see that. Somebody had to see an example of what it looked like to move forward in their business being non-compliant. And so I said, well, if that's where we are, then I'm going to set that example. And we did, and we have. And even when we first started that studio, sometimes every once in a while somebody would come in with a mask, but doggone it, they left without one. And I think we made a great impact in that space. And I think the non-compliance is a huge part. Masking is huge. And I'll tell you what, you can definitely tell who is controlled when you're driving down the road and somebody's inside their car by themselves with their gloves and their mask on, and you just feel, your heart breaks for them. You know, your heart breaks for them. It's like you are hurting yourself, and you're willingly, because that's how any infringement happens. All infringement of absolutely everything God gave you happens when you lay that down and you allow it. So you're going to have to. I think the risk, I feel like when I look at the veteran community, I go, well, geez, you guys are out there putting your lives at risk to protect a nation that the least we can do here is make sure you have one to come back to. That should be an important value system for us. What does this look like, as you said?
You know, we have the Constitution, we talk about it, but the Constitution is a document, obviously, but it's just a document. And unless people honor the document and carry out what is written in the document, then the Constitution might as well not exist. We have to actively defend every word that was written when it was written. We have to know why it was written at the time in order to apply that to where we are today. And those learned gentlemen back there, we think they were back in time, and we think they're not aware of what was going on today. We think they don't understand how all the world operates today. But actually, it's really a contrast to that, because they had a very good idea. They had a very good idea of systems of government and how a pure democracy is nothing but mob control. They understood what a one-person country is like, whether that's through a king or whether it's through a dictatorship or a strongman.
And they went through the tyranny.
They lived through all that. They came over as indentured service. They came over as taxation without representation. They've been through a lot of these, and that's why they wrote what they wrote. And when they signed their names to that document and declared our independence there, they knew they were signing potentially their own death warrants, and yet they signed it anyway, because they were there to defend the ideals and things that they wrote down on that piece of paper. And it saddens me that that is not being taught in our school. It's not even being taught at our higher education learning facilities, such as Harvard Law does not study the Constitution anymore. They call it constitutional law, but it's basically the ways to do workarounds around the Constitution, not about the intent of the Constitution and why it is what it is. The Supreme Court has weakened into something that is supposed to interpret what they think that the founders meant by a certain application. So all these things are being gradually diffused. And whenever we give away a little bit, when we do the Patriot Act or whatever, and we allow, like Susan said, to defend our home, whenever we say, well, it's okay if, that one little thing that we say is one more nick in our armor that defends us against them, whoever, talk about pronouns, they and them, whoever they are,
and it's intended to be the government.
Erode our rights. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that that really strike me is that the Constitution was written, the Bill of Rights were written, in a time that we realized we weren't that far removed from the crisis. And so an example of that, I remember a Dennis the Menace cartoon from many, many years ago, and he was dealing with the guy next door, and I can't remember the young guy's name, but he said,
Mr. Wilson
said, Dennis, you look like you've had a bad day already, and it's not even time for breakfast yet. And Dennis said, yeah, I think I slept too close to the bed where I got in, and I fell out overnight. We don't think about it, but really that statement was not too different from our founding fathers when they said, what kind of country have you given us? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. And we found ourselves falling out of the bed. We found ourselves now dealing with the crisis results of all of the indecisions and the lack of decisions. But the purpose of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence was really a thumb in the eye of a king who had gone way too far. It was also, by its own definition, a remedy. But here we are, 200, almost 50 years removed from that, and the question now is, what does that remedy look like today? Maybe you want to take that
one. Oh, I'll tell you what, I went on quite an education. I've been writing the Constitutionally Compliant Business course because the only way the Constitution, the only way your freedom is actually in place or your faith, there's a public profession of both. And that's an important thing to understand. And so the Constitutionally Compliant Business includes a decal that goes on your window so that you are already stating a place on your brick and mortar location, on your vehicle, whatever, that this, we are a constitutionally compliant business. I will not infringe on anyone's rights. As a matter of fact, I wrote that into all the ticket sales for anything that we do at the studio. This is our part of our OBBM network policy for a studio audience. It's not my job to police your health. Don't expect me to. There is no government that's going to come in and tell me that's my role. I already see the narrative. I already see where that's coming. And I said no. And that's a proactive step to be able to do that. But in the process of doing it, I learned a lot about the government that is very untrue. I learned a lot of things in our history that we weren't taught, and I started to understand that in 1903, when Rockefeller decided to start the education system, we were intentionally not taught what these things meant. And if you don't understand it, see, I have a right to write a contract with you, and I have a right to say in that contract, in those terms, as you've seen it all the time, that I can update the terms of the contract, can't I? I have a right to, on most contracts, that as the person who's providing the contract, I can update the terms. Did I have a right to update what the words meant inside of those terms? And so what we don't understand is how every single piece of that original Constitution was written so specifically that Noah Webster went through with such detail and every word was written with such detail because they knew what had gone on before and what they were going to need to be able to have a document that lasted the test of time. And look how long it's lasted. A lot of governments don't last this long. This has been a huge and beautiful foray into it. But we're going to have to understand what those things mean and get back into it, because we have been lied to about so much, about so much. It gets me frustrated. Because it's something that we're going to have to get back to and go, wait a minute, and start actually questioning every single narrative that we were brought up to believe is what this is, and get it down to the core of, okay, we the people. We the people. Who is we the people?
You know, I had a conversation with a client not too long ago, and in one conversation, I remember him saying, how can we make America great again when it was never great in the first place? That turned into about a 9-hour conversation.
Get you going.
But there was another time that we were having a conversation, and I was bemoaning the Mockingbird media, and there, this was before anybody had made the whole montage of the 52 screens coming up saying, this is a danger to our democracy, this is a danger to our democracy. And I was telling him that I had been hearing that on so many different news sources, and he said, well, it is a danger to our democracy. And I said, well, that's funny, because we don't live in one. And he said, we do live in a democracy, and I can tell, as he was making his statement, he was looking up the definition of democracy on his phone. And I said, then he read it to me, and I said, let me guess, you just looked that up on your phone because you really don't know the definition of democracy. He said, well, I just want to prove to you that you're wrong. I said, well, so there's two things you need to know. Number one, that definition of democracy is brand new, as it might have been updated last night, and you wouldn't know that, number one.
That's right.
And I can prove that, and so I went to my library, and I grabbed my 2005 Collegiate Webster's Dictionary, and I read the definition of democracy. And then I went back to the 80s, and then I went back to the 60s, and I have one that goes all the way back to the early 1900s. And I said to him, the definition of democracy 100 years ago was not the definition of democracy you have right now. Imagine how different it was 200 years ago when our country was founded. In fact, our founding fathers were quoted as saying, every democracy dies as violently as it's born. Because democracy in its truest form is nothing but a mob and mob rule. And he stopped in his tracks for a couple of minutes. He's like, I just don't believe that's true. I said, what part do you not believe is true? The true definition of democracy, or that they die in violence as they're born, or that it's a mob rule? And he said, well, I don't believe that we're not a democracy. I said, no, we're a representative republic. Go back and read it again. He's like, well, I have a master's degree in education from college, and I never heard that. Hello.
Hello.
When I say lead the narrative, that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about people being intentionally misled. I remember one of my mentors is a multimillionaire by the name of Laurel Langmire. And she told us in a class one day, she said, many of you are frustrated with this whole finance thing. You've tried to put your money in and you're not getting the returns you want. You're trying to build a business. You're not getting the results you want. And you're frustrated that you, even with all the money you have, you can't invest it where you want to. And she said, I've had people come to me and say, help me, Laurel, this system is broken. I just need you to understand the system is not broken. It's designed to do exactly what it's doing, and that is to keep the poor poor and make the rich richer.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I lived a lot of my life believing the rich get rich, the poor go broke, and it's the rich's fault. And when I heard her say that, I said, okay, so if the system isn't broken, it's designed to keep me broke. How do I beat the system?
That's right.
She said, that's why you're in this class.
That's the right
question.
That's
exactly what I want to teach you. And I believe there was a president who said that on a debate stage when he said, I'm not cheating the system. I just learned to play the game of the rules you wrote. I think when we talk about remedies, we talk about original meanings of the Constitution, we talk about the original purpose of the Bill of Rights, we talk about why the thumb in the eye was given to the king in the first place. The better we understand that, the better we understand the strategies. There was a lot done to bring a peaceful consolidation of the 13 colonies. There was a lot of effort exerted to bring about peace between two nations before there was a giant war. I hope that we find ourselves on the peaceful side of that resolution. I'm not certain that we will, but I'm also not the expert in the topic. And I think we need to continue to have conversations with people who are even closer and closer to that subject, even closer and closer to that topic, because I believe there are some remedies out there that we can take place in right now that will cripple. I mean, Anheuser-Busch is a perfect example.
Yes.
Disney is a perfect example. There are many others that when we simply stop giving them the funds, eventually the people that are backing them will run out of money or run out of intent and have to come up with a different course. We've seen that already. Because Agenda 2030 was originally Agenda 2021. And prior to that, it was Agenda 2012. And every time they ran into one roadblock, and it was the red, white, and blue. That global intent has been around for well over 100 years. How do we know? Marx, Engels, Stalin, Mao, Hitler, anybody?
Exactly.
If you've been paying attention at all, we're not in a new phase. We're in a cyclical phase, and we're at the 100-year mark of what was brought to us by some of the worst global leaders in the history of humanity. How did we stand up then? What did we do to thwart this plan in 2012? in 2021. What will we do to change this direction in 2030? Firmly, I believe it's the stories that we tell. And we've got to be better at those stories.
100% agreement. We've got to get better at the stories. I think that's the whole... I tell people that's... I think that's the ultimate expression of love, is to learn to be a great communicator. Because if you can communicate well, that doesn't mean everything inside of me is getting it out. It also means I'm understanding you better. It's a two-way. Communication is a two-way thing. And we need to have we need to get better at communication. That's why I have so much respect for what you're doing, Lauren, and I have so much respect for what you're doing over there, Christine, with Addie's Magazine. And so much also for the very first magazine put out now by Citizens for Free Speech. They now have the Free Speech Statesman. And I just encourage people to really embrace this role that we have, because we're at a stage in history today where we can help people understand this is education, but it's education in a hostile environment. But does that mean we shouldn't do it? You know, I just think that's...
I was going to say, are you going to say something that's going to hurt my feelings?
You know...
Are you going to be empathetic to how I feel about how I interpret what you're going to tell me as true or hateful? We need to just communicate. We need to tell people what is our viewpoints. Whether they decide to be hurt by it is their side of the conversation, not our side. If we're telling people how we feel, or if we're telling people our beliefs, we're entitled to our beliefs just as much as they are theirs. So I think the one thing, when we talk about touchy-feely things like this, and we talk about communication, and we talk about stuff, it's too often taken too much on the empathetic side, that I have to be concerned that what I'm going to tell you might deflate you, it might... It make you less whole.
But Larry, there's something to be said for tact. There's something to be said for tact.
Tact is not to tell you, I don't know anymore. If you are a person that has an odor to your body, am I not supposed to tell you that?
Well,
I
mean,
am I supposed to be so
touchy-feely
that I don't tell you that you stink in public, particularly if you're a friend or somebody that I've been dealing with? So all these things, we've taken it so dramatically. The pendulum always swings, and when you get to reach a certain age, you see that the pendulum has swung several times both ways, but it usually ends up swinging one way or the other, and right now I think it's just swung and been lodged. It's stuck, and we need to pull the pendulum down forcefully and get it back towards the center again on so many topics, including this one. So we have to be able to tell the emperor they are naked, and they are not wearing clothes, and they are not finery. And tell some of these people where the reality line is.
Christine, you mentioned a while ago that sometimes your authors are bold and brash and not necessarily agreeable, but they're honest and they're truthful. Tell me a little bit more about that in the writers that you have in Annie's Magazine.
Well, what I was going to say kind of, you know, hooks onto that as well. You know, first of all, I think as individuals, we have to choose not to be offendable. You know, if somebody says something ugly to me or you know, brash to me, I'm like, okay, that's your opinion. That's fine. I'm not offended by it. At the same time, one thing that makes our magazine so great is that our writers, we're not censored. They say what they want to say. And honestly, as veterans, I'm not saying this as all veterans, but in general, we just don't care if people are offended. You know, we've had people, I mean, I have writers who are Vietnam vets who came back and were spat on and yelled at and you know, super, super ugly, horrible, hurtful things said to them. Did it affect them? Yeah, but at the, you know, over time, they just quit caring. And, you know, I think we're at that moment and that place in history where, you know, the feral and the ugly and they have been so offended for so long, and they are just absolutely the antithesis of what they propose to be, right? They're ugly, they're offended by everything, and then on the flip side, they're extremely offensive. And at the end of the day, we as individuals and as a media company, we choose not to be offendable. We're just not going to get offended. If people have ulterior thought processes or whatever, that's fine. The other thing is spirited debate. What happened to this spirited debate? What happened to people who vehemently disagree but can come together and say, okay, I disagree with your stance, you disagree with my stance, but at the end of the day, we are going to be have a spirited debate, and at the end of it, we're going to agree to disagree, and we're still going to be together as citizens, friends, brothers in arms, brothers and sisters in arms. Where did that go? Why are we so incredibly weak? Weak-minded is such a danger to our society today.
You know, I remember when I was in high school and the Cold War was raging, and I remember people talking about the nuclear holocaust potential, and I thought it ironic that we would hide under a desk for a bomb that was going to blow away. And it's, I remember, and I never did get that.
Sure.
We lived close enough to a land base, the largest land base in the United States at the time, and the idea that we were going to hide for something that was going to melt the buildings was just was ludicrous to me. But I do remember, though, thinking, you know, I remember when I got in a fight in high school, middle school, wasn't even high school, it was middle school, and the two of us were scuffling around and flipping each other on the ground and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this high school senior walked up, and he was a big dude. And he grabbed us basically both by our collars and set us aside and looked at us and said, which one of you wants to fight me? And that was the end of it. We were done. It was all over. And I thought at the time of the Cold War, we need somebody big enough, bad enough to step into the scene and look at the parties of the Cold War and go, sit down, shut up, I got something to say about this. And it was only a couple of years later that the movie Independence Day came out, that Will Smith was a star in. And at the time I thought, you know, that is the perfect illustration of we've got to come to a place where there's an enemy big enough that we all fight together to beat it. Yes. And if it has to be the aliens or it has to be some other attack, what I never thought was that all the independent nations would have to come together to fight globalism. But that's where we're at. We're at a place where if we don't stand up for what we individually believe and stand beside those who believe something entirely different, then we will all be destroyed. Because there is no unifying agreement with the globalists. They want world dominance, period. And they don't care about your religious belief, your political affiliation, the size of your family, the color of your skin, or the education level that you have.
Or who you're sleeping with, or who you think you are.
But they'll use those things to divide you.
Yeah.
And when we talk about leading the narrative, when we talk about overcoming the adversity that we're facing, the stories that we tell to our spouse over dinner, to our kids on the way to the softball game or the soccer game, to our neighbors over the fence when we're talking about mowing the yard, those are the stories that shape our nation. Those are the stories because they are the conversations that we have. Do we tell the truth in love? Do we tell something that makes us feel good because it makes someone else feel bad? Do we find ourselves vitriolically opposed to people with different ideas? Frankly, I don't care who you sleep with, just don't expect me to do the same. I don't care who you call yourself, but don't expect me to change who I believe I am just to make you feel comfortable. The narrative. There's a meta-narrative. It's a big storyline that's been around for thousands of years. There's one that exceeds the ideas of the globalists and the communists and the patriots of every nation. There's a meta-narrative larger than all of human life. We'll get to that another time with an expert on the subject. But I want you to know right now, just like those of us have been discussed today, there's a narrative that's making the decisions that you make financially. Who do you support? Where do you go? What products do you buy? What social media companies do you trust to carry your conversations? Where do you submit your photos? How do you do your business? Who do you do business with? It's all part of the same narrative. You have as much right, no, obligation to be a cohesive, intentional part of driving that narrative and not just a victim of it. There is a narrative, and you'll either lead the narrative or you'll be led by it. That's your choice. I'm J. Lauren Walsh for Lead the Narrative on Talent Legacies TV. Have a blessed day.